Coming up on KPBS Roundtable, we take a look at San Diego's newest sports team, San Diego FC, as they get ready for their franchise debut this weekend. What do fans need to know about the team, its players, and its role in the region's soccer culture?
To me, if they could go out there, score goals, fill Snapdragon Stadium, and, you know, get some building blocks for the future, I think their season will be considered a rousing success.
We hear about Major League Soccer's newest addition and what it means for San Diego Tijuana's sports landscape. That's all ahead on KPBS Roundtable. San Diego soccer fans, get ready. A new team is making its franchise debut this weekend, the San Diego FC. Their first regular season match is Sunday afternoon against the LA Galaxy in Carson. And their inaugural home match will be Saturday, March 1st at Snapdragon Stadium. SDFC is the 30th team in Major League Soccer. That's the top division of men's soccer in the U.S. It's also a league containing some pretty big international soccer stars, including a legend of the sport, Leo Messi. Here to talk more about San Diego's newest team is Cesar Hernandez. He's a reporter with ESPN who covers North American soccer. Also joining me is Alejandro Villaseñor. He's with San Diego Football and co-host of the soccer podcast, Two Balls and a Mic. And finally, Ryan Finley is also here with us. He's a sports editor with the San Diego Union-Tribune. Thanks all for being here. Before digging into this new club, I wanted to ask each of you how you found a love for the sport of soccer. Alejandro, what got you hooked initially about the sport?
Yeah, no, it's a great question to start off. I think just being from a Mexican background, growing up in Tijuana, in Mexico, it was just kind of like you either watch and play soccer or you don't really do anything else. So I think from an early age, I just fell in love with soccer, watching Chivas. That was still is my favorite soccer team. And just being able to play with my dad at the park and, again, going outside in the street and playing with the neighbors and, you know, yelling, "Hey, car coming, everyone get out of the way," and then putting the goals back again with the rocks and just kicking the ball around. So that's really what got me into soccer.
Cesar, how about you? You know, what kind of captured you about the sport initially?
I'm not sure if it's so much it was captured, just more so just forced upon me, since I don't ever remember a time that soccer wasn't a part of my life. According to my parents, like shortly after I was born, they're already putting soccer jerseys on me. So it's always been a part of my life. It was a passion at a young age. And then when I realized I wasn't good enough to be a professional, I then pivoted to write about it instead, since I would not be able to keep pace with any of those athletes out there, whether it be first division, second division, third division. But yeah, always been a part of my life.
And Ryan, I know, you know, you grew up here in San Diego. We've talked about the Padres on the show before. I think you were a Charger fan. You spoke about your San Diego fandom. Where does soccer fit into that for you?
Oh, you know, like a lot of San Diegans, I grew up going to soccer games, right? The only soccer where, you know, you can allow 13 goals and still win handily. So grew up going to the sports arena, seeing, you know, Bronco Sagota, Zoltan Toth. I can name way too many of these guys. You know, I think I went to a Clavio Rutilo soccer camp when I was a kid. To me, you know, soccer was the one sport that San Diego always won in. You know, the Padres struggled. The Chargers could break your hearts. The soccer seemed to win their league when I was a kid almost every year. And actually, if you look at them now, they're still killing it in their indoor league. I know that that's not the level of soccer that we're getting with San Diego FC. With San Diego FC is much more, I think, nuanced, a much tougher level of competition. But, you know, I always grew up associating San Diego with winning when it came to soccer. And, you know, you add in the San Diego Wave, who've had some success, and now San Diego FC. It's going to be really fun to see how San Diego embraces this club.
So one part of soccer that I think differentiates it from other sports is some of the lingo. You know, it's played on a pitch, not a field, soccer club, not a team. But even the word soccer is kind of a part of this discussion, and it's in the name of the team, right? It's San Diego Football Club. Cesar, I'm wondering if you can talk about how they kind of came upon the name and how that works.
I think a lot of that, in my own perspective, it could be interchangeable in the North American soccer like landscape. Some people, I mean, even use the example of pitch or field. I use that interchangeably. Club, team, I think it's the same idea. But I think that when you say football or football, you know, whether it be with the double O or the U with the accent in Spanish, I think that tries to give a little bit more credibility, if you will. I'm not entirely sure if I believe that entirely. I think you're allowed to use soccer. I think there's nothing wrong with being a soccer club if you wanted to be SC instead. But I think that it kind of like harkens back to the early days of soccer. Remember, MLS is just, well, it's celebrating its 30th year, which is making me feel pretty old because I was there in the first year of MLS back in 96. And it's making me realize that little by little how older I'm getting. But obviously we're talking about soccer and football and football that has been around in a professional setups for 100 plus years, right? There have been leagues and there have been competitions that have been around since the late 1800s. So I think because of that, I think that's why people sometimes like the idea of calling a team football or football, because it kind of like lends to that older idea of what soccer came from. But from my own perspective, I think there's nothing wrong with calling yourself a soccer club if you really wanted to do that.
Alejandro, I'm curious about your thoughts. I mean, our senior producer actually mentioned, oh, there's not a mascot name. I mean, that's like another differentiator for soccer teams than for like the Padres or the Chargers, right?
Yeah, from what we know, San Diego FC won't have a mascot. And I think that really depends on what type of fan you are, right? I mean, you have traditional teams like Manchester United being called the Red Devils, and then you have in Mexico with Chivas de Guadalajara, and then you have La Máquina de Cruz Azul, and it really comes down to just what type of fan you are. If you're really just worried about what's going to happen on the field, you're not too worried about that. If you're kind of more worried about the optics of how San Diego is going to be represented, then you kind of do wish you had a mascot, I guess. But yeah, I mean, there's some clubs that don't have them. There's clubs that do. And I think at the end of the day, it's going to come down to how they play on the field.
And this is the evolution of Major League Soccer, isn't it, guys? When this first started, you know, the league's in its 30th year, they had very sort of Americanized team names, right? You had the New York, New Jersey Metro Stars, the Columbus Crew, they still exist. Mm-hmm. The LA Galaxy, they still exist. But these early names in Major League Soccer were very, very Americanized. Mm-hmm. And I think you've seen, and I don't know if it's maybe the league taking itself a little bit more seriously or trying to capture sort of a savvy international fan, but I think that you've seen these names get more and more, for lack of a better word, serious and maybe international, you know, Inter Miami, right? Real Salt Lake. Now you've got, you know, San Diego FC. I mean, even looking at something like, you know, the old San Jose Earthquakes, Kansas City Wizards, you know, they were the Wiz when they first started, right? Now they're Sporting Kansas City. Yeah. There's been this evolution of the league, I think, as the league has grown and matured, that the team names have too. And I don't know if that's necessarily a good or a bad thing for an American fan, but I think it's important to note that, you know, they really do have this sort of serious side to MLS now.
I think that's an important thing to bring up, because I think that, and it speaks to what San Diego's goals are too, because maybe back in 1996, 1997, you were trying to appeal to just the domestic fan base. I think now, with a, let's say, San Diego FC, like, you're looking at a more international audience. You see that through the broadcast deal that they have with Apple, which is a global deal that they have as well. You could say it's modern. Personally, I think it feels a little generic sometimes when you do that, because it isn't as exciting, those names from the 90s. But yeah, I think it speaks to just the way that Major League Soccer is growing and how it wants to grow beyond just the North American region, get a lot more attention outside of just the United States.
Well, and as you mentioned, you know, how different it was 30 years ago, Cesar, one part of it that I remember is they didn't have penalty kicks, right? They had...
they had different rules. They're willing to try different rules. I advise anybody who wants to see what things were like back then, just Google YouTube goalkeeper wars, or the penalty shootouts, or just, yeah.
It's like a hockey shootout is what it kind of looked like, right?
Yeah, obviously they try to be more in line with the global game now.
Okay, so Major League Soccer today, Ryan was talking a little bit about the type of play the MLS brings that may, you know, not be present in with soccer as with some of the other leagues and teams we have here in San Diego. Why is this team different from the soccer teams we have in the region?
Yeah, no, I think something unique about San Diego FC is the academy that they're bringing along with them, called the Right to Dream Academy, which you don't really see that anywhere in America. It's an academy that commits to youngsters with their studies. They get to reside at the sport, the facilities, and they have that academy over in Ghana, Egypt, and Denmark. So it's something that could potentially revolutionize the game here at the States. That's really what singles out from San Diego FC. That's what's more unique about them than ever. You can talk about bringing superstars like Chucky Lozano, but San Diego Wave brought Alex Morgan. That could be an argument that she's a bigger soccer star than what Chucky Lozano is worldwide. So they're really kind of diving in on this academy to be unique.
Yeah, and it's player development, right? They've decided that the way that they're going to sort of their edge in their angle here is going to be to develop their own players through their academy. You know, they can, for lack of a better word, recruit promising young players from both sides of the border, right? Both San Diego and from Mexico. Mm-hmm. They put them up out at Singing Hills where they've built a brand new facility. It's scheduled to open. The academy is scheduled to open this summer. That's going to be their angle. The problem is even the players who you get today aren't going to be ready to play Major League Soccer for another, what, 4, 5, 6 years. And so I think what we're seeing now with this roster construction really is almost a little bit of a patch or a temporary shift in their strategy until those young players are ready to be developed and come up through their system. They've signed some players who have played for Right to Dream Academy teams, players who know the style of play that they try to play, and that's good. But, you know, this, I don't think that their sort of overall strategy is really going to be in place again for another couple of years until their younger players really develop.
Cesar?
Also, it's just important to keep in mind because what the team looks like now within, or even just within the next few seasons, it's not what their end goal is. But yeah, just to reiterate, they are going to have the highest operating budget for an academy in MLS. They're the first team in MLS to combine a private on-site like school with free residency. That's just not something that happens in Major League Soccer. They're the only ones that could legally recruit players from Baja California due to FIFA rule dictating that you're 50 kilometers within a border, and also people are there housed within 100 kilometers within a club's headquarters. So that is extremely unique within Major League Soccer. And like the two of you said there, it's going to be all about development, but it's going to take some time. Definitely going to take some time.
When we look at a lot of the big stars in MLS, there are some big international stars that come and play. It sounds like SDFC is really investing in building up, you know, its product homegrown. And as the point Ryan made, it's going to take a while for that to happen, right? But it did sign one pretty big name, Irving Chucky Lozano. Alejandro, can you tell us about him? Like, what makes him special and what do we need to know about him?
Yeah, so Chucky Lozano is a Mexican native that really made his mark scoring a goal for Mexico in the 2018 World Cup against Germany. And then it skyrocketed from there. He's a fast player that plays on the wings, on the field. He likes to take on players one-on-one. He likes to score goals. He made his mark in Europe, going to PSV over in the Netherlands and then transitioning over to Napoli in Italy, going back to PSV and now landing in San Diego FC. He is, I believe, almost 30 years old. So typically a soccer player, their prime goes from anywhere from 26 to 29. So he still has a couple years up there. So he's a player that's going to be just a franchise player. He's the face of the team and everything's going to go through him.
And I think what's important about that too is that he checks two boxes. There's one box right there that Alejandro just brought up that, like, yes, he's no longer at his peak, you know, but he still has enough talent to become an MVP candidate in MLS. And I think the other very important box that was checked off is that he's a household name in the Mexican soccer world. My father, who doesn't really care about MLS, he's asking me about Chucky Lozano and like what he's going to do over here in San Diego. So I think that's going to be very significant. Remember, this is still a business in the end, right? And you're going to have those sellouts the first season. And a big part of being able to do that is having a superstar like Chucky Lozano. So I think that's very, very important what he brings on the field and off the field. And I could talk for hours and hours about what he could possibly do off the field with his help with the Right to Dream Academy, because he was a part of what I think is probably the most important academy in Mexico and all of North America, which is called Pachuca. So I think because of that, there's going to be that tie-in as well, which is what he's going to be able to do with Right to Dream. But yeah, he checks a number of boxes for SDFC.
Ryan?
Yeah, I thought it was a brilliant signing when they decided to go get him. You know, he checks some boxes, like you said. You know, I think being a Spanish speaker, Mexican national, will help with the international appeal of this team. You know, I'm still really curious to see how this team resonates in Tijuana and beyond, right? They have the Xolos there. Obviously, they have a soccer culture there. They are discerning soccer fans, by and large. But I think that Lozano really is a fantastic signing for them. It's not just getting a big name to get a big name, right? I think that Major League Soccer has a reputation, and maybe it did all the way up until Leo Messi got to Miami. It had a reputation of sort of where great international players go to retire, right? I think Lozano still got enough in the tank to be the star of this team. I think that that really this is a brilliant first star for this team to have.
So that's Chucky. Are there, you know, any other players worth mentioning or, you know, bringing attention to as their season's getting started here?
I will say San Diego did something interesting, and they kind of gave an answer to the fans that have been asking for a homegrown player or someone that's from San Diego, and that's midfielder Luca de la Torre. Luca de la Torre was born in San Diego, and at the age of 14, he decided to go to Europe to play for an academy and try to pursue his dream at making it professionally in Europe. That's every professional soccer player's dream, is to play in Europe. That's the motherland of soccer. And he did that successfully for a couple of years. He got a couple call-ups to the U.S. men's national soccer team. And then now at the age that he is, he wasn't getting the minutes at his club Celta Vigo over in Spain. So he decided to come. He's in San Diego on loan. So at the end of the contract, he can go back to Celta Vigo, or San Diego FC can decide to purchase him. But he's a great signing. He's very, very skillful in the midfield. He knows how to pass the ball, give through balls to the attacking players. So he's going to be a pivotal point in that midfield.
Anybody else come to mind, Cesar?
Yeah, I think we got to talk about the other DP, so designated player. That's what they talk about in MLS. We don't have to get lost in the very confusing rules that MLS have. But let's just say that DP means the limited amount of like very good top level players they can sign that doesn't impact the salary cap. Andres Dreyer, he's a 26-year-old Danish winger. I mean, listen, I'm not going to pretend that I've been watching every weekend of him in the Belgian top flight, but those who have and who I've talked with have stated that he's a very well-rounded attacker, and he has a capability of becoming another star alongside Chucky Lozano. So that's definitely someone to keep an eye on right there, is Andres Dreyer.
Ryan, anything to add there?
No. I agree. I think, you know, the designated players are guys who basically their salaries don't count against your salary cap. So those will be your highest paid players primarily. Those are the two guys. You know, if I was buying jerseys for my kids, it would be a Lozano jersey or a Dreyer jersey, because I think that those are the two guys who have a chance to really be standouts and to stick here as this team transitions from year one to year two and beyond.
So one other name I wanted to get your take on is the head coach, is Mikey Varas. What do we know about him, and, you know, what kind of style of play can we expect from a team being coached by him?
Mikey Varas, he has a lot of experience with youth players, and he was previously the interim head coach for the U.S. men's national team for two games, and then he got this gig with San Diego FC. But he is bought into the system of Right to Dream. He loves to develop young players into making it into the professional level, and I think his play style is going to be very attacking, very high pressing, and you know, that could kind of bring some conflicts on the counter attacking and defensive side. But again, it's lined up to be fun watching them play, and it's going to be fun soccer.
I think, without getting too much into the X's and O's, I think a way of simplifying it is that it's got to be an entertaining soccer. The clear intent is to play entertaining soccer. They want to be the protagonist. They want possession of the ball. They want to dictate the pace of the game through their attack, whether that's going to lead to a number of goals being scored against them because they want a lot of the ball as well is another question. But I think it'll be fun. And that's the intent, at least early on. And then if they lose some games, we'll see what happens. But that's their goal at the moment.
We'll see. You know, San Diego, I think, can be, I say this as a native, San Diego can be a weird sports market, guys. You know this, right? It's not only winning, but you have to win a certain way. And, you know, you look a little bit at, say, San Diego State football, which I think was a great example. Brady Hoke, they ran the ball and played defense. And when you're winning 10, 11 games a year, fans love it. When you're winning six games a year, you don't last very long. And you look at what San Diego State did. They brought in somebody who said, hey, we're going to be exciting. And when I hear some of the things that Mikey Varas has said so far and kind of reading the tea leaves with this team, I think the expectation is to go out there and try to score some goals, try to get your fans into the game. You know, expectations, I don't think outside of their building, outside of their headquarters, I don't think expectations are terribly high of a Major League Soccer expansion club. Yeah. To me, if they could go out there, score goals, fill Snapdragon Stadium, and, you know, get some building blocks for the future, I think their season will be considered a rousing success.
So I think every good sports team inevitably has a really good rival. Do we know who SDFC's biggest rivals are? Cesar?
That's a good question. That's a good question, because right now, people would just look north and be like, well, obviously it's got to be somewhere like in LA. But right now, I mean, LA Galaxy, LAFC, they both have a pretty strong rivalry against each other. I think the answer will be one of those two. I think the easy answer is maybe Galaxy, because that's going to be their first game of the season. Maybe there's some animosity would be built through that, especially since they are the current title holders. But I would say it's either those two. I would say if we're looking beyond that, there's a chance perhaps with the Earthquakes. Maybe I was chatting with someone the other day, like, you know what, like in MLS, sometimes a lot of the conversation surrounds the big coastal teams and including Miami as well. But maybe a way that SDFC and the San Jose Earthquakes could take away a little bit of the attention away from the Los Angeles teams, develop their own rivalry there later on. But I would say probably the Galaxy, but it's absolutely up in the air right now. I'm curious to hear what you guys have to say and what comes to mind.
Alejandro, your thoughts?
Yeah, I would honestly side a little bit more with LAFC. Based on the same similarities of how they started, Tom Penn was also their CEO when they started, and they got a big Mexican DP signing with Carlos Vela at the time, and San Diego FC is kind of following the same footsteps with Tom Penn as CEO, signing Chucky Lozano. So I think a lot of like the fans kind of are developing that rivalry already with LAFC. I think LA Galaxy is going to be more like the annoying cousin or anything like that, where, yeah, we're cool, but we're still going to not like each other from time to time. But yeah, I would put my money more on LAFC.
Ryan, any of your thoughts on who the Dodgers of the SDFC might be?
I think it's going to be like a lot of San Diego LA rivalries, where San Diego is going to consider LA the big rival and LA is going to pretend like they don't care. the LA teams are going to go, no, we have each other. We don't worry about them. You know, the way you build a rivalry, and we've seen this in other sports in San Diego over the years, the way you win, you start a rivalry and you get one going is to win some games. And especially if San Diego FC can open their season against the Galaxy in Carson, which not for nothing is the same stadium where the Chargers played when they left San Diego. If they could win Sunday against LAFC in Carson, I think you might see the spark of what could maybe one day grow into a pretty good rivalry.
Up next, we continue our look into San Diego's soccer culture when Roundtable returns. Welcome back to KPBS Roundtable. I'm Andrew Bracken. This week on the show, we're talking about San Diego's newest sports franchise, San Diego FC. I'm joined this week by some familiar voices to San Diego soccer fans. Alejandro Villaseñor from San Diego Football is here. ESPN's Cesar Hernandez is also joining us, along with the Union Tribune's Ryan Finley. You know, you'd been talking about a little bit about SDFC's Right to Dream Academy and how they're looking to develop players. Cesar, I think one unique aspect you recently wrote about to the team comes down to the proximity to the border and the relationship with Mexico and the United States. Yes. I'm wondering if you can kind of talk more about that and what makes it so unique to the MLS.
First and foremost, it's just the capability to not only capitalize on that market, but to also recruit those players. Let's start with the market. It is one of the largest cities in Mexico. And right now, yes, you do have Xolos down there, but Xolos, if promotion relegation wasn't paused in Mexico, they'd be a minor league soccer team right now in Mexico, which says a lot about the issues that they had in recent years. And yes, they have a diehard fan base, but it's middling results. And I think a lot of Tijuana sports fans are looking for something exciting up north, especially if it happens to have a Mexican national team player and a Mexican superstar. And then you talk about beyond that, the talent in Tijuana. Back in the 2012 Olympics, Mexico won gold medal in the Olympics, and that had three players that had ties to the Baja California region. There are a number of players that you look at in Mexican soccer that are from the Baja California region. There's a huge potential here for San Diego to be able to scout these players legally, because once again, without getting lost in the weeds here, just FIFA rules dictate that, like, you know, if you're underage, you can't move from one country to another unless you're close to the border, and therefore you're able to legally do that. So San Diego are able to do that and also capitalize in a country that has a history of success with Mexican youth soccer at the international level, but difficulties with transitioning those players to senior teams and Liga MX. There are a number of players that's happened to in Tijuana, and San Diego can capitalize that and bring some of those players over. And then you couple that with the ability to get an education through Right to Dream. So it's going to be very appealing. It's going to be very interesting to see how that plays out. And I wouldn't be surprised if 10 years down the line, if we're talking about up and coming players for not only the U.S. men's national team, but also for the Mexican national team that are being developed through SDFC.
Alejandro, anything to add?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think Cesar just kind of pointed everything out, right? I mean, if you want to think of it from the perspective of a parent that lives in Tijuana and has a talented kid that can play soccer, and you get approached by a team in the U.S. and say, hey, we can take your kid, we can give him an education, they'll get to live here in the States. That's what a lot of families over in Mexico aspire to. So I think it's a no-brainer for a lot of people over there.
So earlier, tickets and selling tickets kind of came up. That's an inevitable part of, you know, a new franchise. I wanted to talk about your impressions of how San Diego soccer community has responded to the team so far. I mean, even from a ticket sales perspective, do we know, are there sellouts in the works here? What's your impression, Ryan?
Soccer's an interesting sport when you compare it to say baseball and football and the sports that San Diego's traditionally had high level teams in. You know, even the supporters groups, right? There are seven different supporters groups following San Diego FC right now. It's a bunch of different communities coming together. And I think that the really smart thing that San Diego FC did when they first started, again, you know, more than a year ago, was to try to bring in all the different neighborhoods and all of the different communities and sort of bring them together under the banner of San Diego FC. They did a chrome ball tour where they went to the 18 different communities and neighborhoods in San Diego and had sort of, you know, come meet the team things there. We went by the one in La Mesa and it was great. And, you know, to me, that's really smart. I don't know if any bad blood exists between fans of the former San Diego Loyal and this new club. I know that there was a thought at some point that the group that ran the Loyal would one day get an MLS club that they could call their own. But, you know, it looks as if the locals, their old supporters group, has folded nicely into San Diego FC. To me, it's just going to be a matter of, it's the same challenges that the Padres faced, same challenges that San Diego State faces. You know, can you hit the right price point that you can fill the stadium? Can you create a fun environment, not only for diehards, but for families? And, you know, can you win? Or can you be exciting enough that maybe the wins and losses aren't necessarily imperative in year one? Those are their challenges at this moment. I don't know how many season tickets they've sold, but I do know that their price point is in line with going to a Padre game. And that's a high price point for a lot of people. And so, you know, the question is, what do you get when you go to a San Diego FC game? And, you know, we'll find out for sure on March 1st.
And Alejandro, you know, we've been talking about all the different other soccer teams. We have the Wave, their season starting up, you know, soon enough. What's your impression of how this team's being embraced and the potential popularity there?
Yeah, no, I mean, just to kind of touch on the tickets too, I know their big worry is filling up that supporter section. They want all those 5,000 tickets sold to the point where they even ran a very, very good promotion. If you became a member of the San Diego Independent Supporters Union, you would have access to the $18 per game ticket. So when you pay for that season ticket membership, if you do the math, you're paying for 21 games, $18 a ticket, which is a great deal, to be honest. But yeah, I think overall they're doing a pretty good job at just reaching out to the community. Like Ryan said, on the Chrome Ball Tour, if you went out to the one in Chula Vista, that was massive. They have Lucha Libre, they have they had concerts, they had everything. So I think they are doing a pretty good job compared to maybe what San Diego Wave hasn't been able to do, especially kind of like in the South Bay area. San Diego FC is capitalizing on that and trying to win on that, like Latino population to go into the stadium.
Cesar, go ahead.
Oh yeah, I am curious though, because I think there's going to be a lot of tickets sold. I think Chucky's going to bring in a lot of fans, but I do think that there's still some simmering frustrations with Loyal, just because, I mean, let's be real, like the introduction of San Diego FC did help cement the death of Loyal. And I think that's worth recognizing.
Yeah. Just to chime in, the Loyal were in the second division of men's soccer, right? And
correct.
I think
correct.
Their hope was that they would eventually become an MLS team or be able to enter that market.
There are a number of different issues there regarding that. But I do think that there are some fans who are still a little justifiably bitter about that. I think there are also some Wave fans who are also justifiably bitter about saying, hey, we were doing some record numbers at Snapdragon Stadium. We, you know, were really breaking barriers within the NWSL, and suddenly this new team shows up and says, hey, you're now behind us in line when it comes to priority for scheduling games. So I am curious to see how that plays out. Maybe it's not as serious as, you know, as I may think it is, or maybe it's just a small little factor, but I think that's also something to keep in mind for a couple of those soccer bubbles that may not fully buy into it just yet.
What is the potential impact for the Wave FC, and how have they responded to this new team?
No, I mean, I think I have the same question that a lot of people do, is why aren't these two teams collaborating more, right? You want to tap in on the San Diego soccer community, you would think some sort of collaboration would be the answer to that. And that just hasn't been the case. I know when we did an interview with CEO Tom Penn, he did say that they pay more rent, so they get priority on scheduling the games. And we followed that with who the coach for San Diego Wave, Casey Stoney, was. And she said she was used to it. She said she's not surprised. And it caused a lot of controversy. But at the end of the day, it always, when it comes to San Diego State, it always comes down to who's paying more money. And that was San Diego FC. And I mean, now that the schedules are both out, you see that when San Diego FC is playing away, San Diego Wave is going to play at home and vice versa. There's, I think, maybe a couple of weekends where one plays on Saturday, one plays on Sunday. So it's interesting. But at the end of the day, I don't think it'll be a worry anymore for a lot of fans now that they have the schedules. But it was a big talking point before that.
After the break, what San Diego sports fans can expect from the team in its first season. That's ahead on Roundtable. This is KPBS Roundtable. I'm Andrew Bracken. Today on the show, we're talking about San Diego's newest sports team, San Diego FC. I'm speaking with ESPN's Cesar Hernandez, Alejandro Villaseñor from San Diego Football, and the UT's Ryan Finley. Alejandro, we were chatting before we got started, and you kind of made the comment of just the amount of media coverage the team has seen so far. Are you surprised by the lack of media coverage that San Diego FC has gotten? Or do you think, I guess, you know, another way to phrase it is, you know, do you think San Diego media is ready to have an MLS team and for what comes with it?
Yeah, no, I mean, just to give everyone some background, my colleague Tony and myself started kind of like our soccer podcast 5 years ago, and we started covering San Diego Loyal, and we fell in love with the local soccer scene, and then Wave came along, and now San Diego FC. So we kind of been able to build up, and Cesar's here as a witness from when we first started. We've managed to grow quite a bit, and yeah, I am a little worried about the lack of coverage that San Diego FC is having. I think legacy media here in San Diego is not ready for what soccer is going to bring to the city. You do see it from time to time when you go to trainings. The first media availability for San Diego FC, packed house, everyone was there. Fast forward 2 weeks after, it's just my buddy Tony and a couple other local media from Tijuana. So it'll be interesting to see how the team plays, if they start winning, how much coverage they'll start getting. And I think that will kind of determine that factor too.
Ryan, talk more about that. I mean, you know, you guys cover so many different sports, so many different teams. Mm-hmm. You know, how does SDFC fit in? And, you know, what are some of the challenges you're seeing in UT kind of covering this new team and new league?
You know, we have an excellent soccer writer, Mark Ziegler, who's, you know, goes to every World Cup, every Olympics, is as smart a soccer fan as I know. He will be covering the club. The problem is his day job right now is also covering San Diego State basketball. And so when you reach February and March, he's a busy man, as you might imagine. We have a staff full of people who want to be a part of the coverage, who are excited by the prospect of something new. I still think a lot of San Diegans have been scarred by the Chargers leaving. And, you know, when new teams come in, you know, there's this idea that they're sort of filling this hole left by the Chargers. And, you know, it's hard to fill a hole that an NFL team leaves. The NFL is super popular. But, you know, they've patched it with the Wave and now with San Diego FC and with, you know, even like a G League team and these other things that are coming in. You know, San Diego is becoming a much better sports town because of the addition of professional soccer. And, you know, in terms of coverage, in terms of our readership, you know, I think that they want to learn more about this team and learn more about soccer. I think our readership base probably is a little less soccer savvy than Alejandro's podcast listeners, right? Or even the people who read Cesar and ESPN, you know, trying to explain to them not only why it's important, but what makes for good soccer. That's going to be the real sort of task for us here in year one, to introduce our readers to this team in a way, sort of on their level, and in a way that will get them, you know, excited to see what San Diego FC is all about.
It's something to capitalize on too, because it just, I mean, you look at the average age of no offense to MLB fans, I'm like, I'm a fan of the Padres, like, that's like one, you know, I'm definitely, let's support them. But like, look at the average age of MLB fan, and then you look at a soccer fan, they tend to be more diverse. They tend to be younger. It's an interesting demographic that I feel like, I'm not going to say that it's overlooked, but it's just something that's something that could be capitalized.
So historically, I think this has come up, you know, expansion teams are not always that great in their first season. I think San Diego soccer fans may have been spoiled somewhat from the Wave, because they seemed like they were really good right out of the gate. What are you all expecting from San Diego FC this season?
I will say one thing about San Diego FC, to maybe anyone that's barely kind of starting to get into soccer with their hometown team. San Diego FC is built their squad in a very different way than any other kind of franchise would. They're really being sneaky with it. They're trying to build a powerful team with not well-known players. So in my opinion, it's either going to be a fantastic season where they fight for some of the top four spots on the table and make a playoff run, or it's going to be the very opposite. It's going to be bad or good. I don't think there'll be an in-between there.
It's an interesting point, because the guy who's running the stuff in the background, Tyler Heaps, he comes from an analytical background. I know maybe other sports be like, but analytical, like, who cares? Like, everybody is like analytical and has some sort of like sports data scientist. And that's not always the case in soccer. That's not always the case in Major League Soccer. There are some teams who don't have anybody, like full-time staff member, who's looking at these things. Tyler Heaps comes for that, and he's the general manager for this team. And like Alejandro was talking about there, yes, you're going to be looking at this roster. There are going to be fans who say, I don't know that guy. I don't know this person. but I can guarantee that they have crunched the numbers, and I could guarantee that they've poured over probably like hours and endless amount of data to make these choices. Whether that works on the field, I'm not entirely sure, but I am really curious to see how that pans out. And all that said, I don't have the highest of hopes when it comes to this team, when I'm looking at this roster. And yes, there's some interesting names here. I could see them being competitive and barely sneaking into the playoffs, which I think would be a success for a team in their inaugural season. But beyond that, I think that fans will have to be patient with this project.
Yeah, I mean, if there's any baseball fans listening to this, think of San Diego FC as a Moneyball team. We all love that movie, and that's kind of like what San Diego FC is trying to do.
Ryan, any thoughts?
Yeah, I think expectations in year one, and maybe it doesn't come down to how many matches you win or whether you make the playoffs. I think it comes down to, number one, you put an exciting product on the field. Number two, you develop a fan base that will support you in good times and bad. Mm-hmm. And number three, you inch closer to, you know, we talk about player development, right? You open the academy. You know, I guarantee you that if the academy opens and San Diego FC brings talented young men into their program, they will consider this a success. There's a reason why in American pro sports, expansion teams almost never make the playoffs. The system is a little bit rigged against expansion teams. It just is. you know, the Las Vegas Golden Knights, I think, are the one expansion team to ever win the whole thing. There's a reason why it's a struggle. And I'd be lying if I thought this season wasn't going to be a little bit of a struggle for San Diego FC. But I think that you can get some off-the-field victories that will really help cement yourself as a part of the fabric of San Diego sports. And that's what they're going to have to look at this year.
Earlier, you know, the topic of supporter groups came up and ticket prices, things like that. And you mentioned the sort of, you know, cheaper ticket prices for the supporter sections. One thing to note for potential fans going to games is you kind of have to work if you're in the supporter sections. It's not so much sitting down during the game, right, Cesar?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a 12th man like perspective, but perhaps taken to another level. You have people who may not even watch the game at all whatsoever because they're waving flags the entire time. You have people who aren't, who it's an extension of the team, and it is nonstop. No, it's not as if they're just, you know, take breaks and they're just like 5 to 10s or just chill. No, they do genuinely see themselves as an extension of the team. And it is for those out there who have yet to experience a soccer game, have yet to experience something like that, I think it's something that's definitely unique and a very interesting aspect of soccer. And I highly recommend checking out a game just to see what supporter groups are like, because it's a much more active involvement when it comes to a sports team.
And for those that may not be able to go in person, where can fans watch the games? Where can fans catch SDFC on TV, on streaming?
Yeah, great. I mean, MLS is partnered with Apple TV, so you have to get kind of like the MLS season pass to watch every MLS game. I'm not too sure why the system is like that. I wish you could just kind of turn on the TV and watch the game, but MLS is kind of weird in their own way like that. But the best spot would be through Apple TV.
Yeah, and they did announce, I will say, San Diego FC did announce some bar partners, some pub partners. I forget exactly which pubs they announced, if you don't want to make the investment in MLS season pass, because, you know, unfortunately, it's just another subscription you're going to have to add to, which can get very annoying when it comes to trying to follow all these leagues and all these sports. But SDFC did announce a pub partner program, and I'm not entirely sure which ones that they noted, but that's also an option there if you don't want to get a subscription. 100%.
Yeah, something to look out for.
To say nothing, Cesar, that soccer is just more fun watched with other people. You know,
there you go. Yes,
I think more so, really, maybe more so than any other sport. You know, you can walk into a bar and meet up with a bunch of fellow fans, and it becomes really fun really fast. And yeah. I think that's something, again, I'm excited to watch develop here in San Diego as San Diego FC kind of gets rooted here, right? You know, where are the fun places to go watch them? Mm-hmm. If you can't go to Snapdragon Stadium, you know, where can you go? And you know, what different bars offer different things? I think that's going to be a really fun offshoot of this team.
Yes, 100%.
And those pub partners that you mentioned there, it sounds like they're Mavericks, Mr. Tempo, and McGregor's. So, you know, SDFC's, their first regular season match is Sunday afternoon. What will you all be watching for from the squad?
I'm curious to see how competitive they are. It's going to be a really interesting litmus test against the current title holders in MLS. Yes, it's not the same champions from last season. What fans will soon learn is that success doesn't exactly mean that you can maintain your same roster in MLS, and I'm sure it's the same for other sports. So Galaxy have changed in the offseason. That being said, it's not easy to go up against the Galaxy, especially up at Dignity Health Sports Park. So I'm curious to see, one, if Chucky Lozano lives up to the hype, and two, if SDFC will be competitive from the get-go.
Alejandro?
Yeah, no, I kind of want to piggyback that from Cesar. It's just, I want to see that if they kind of have that chemistry already built. We've heard Mikey Vadas, their head coach, talking about the team already finding their identity. So I kind of want to see if it's shown on this game. I do think they'll score first in this game, if anyone's interested in hearing that. But I think they'll end up tying this game, to be honest.
Brian, your final thoughts from you?
Yeah, to me, I look at, you know, is this going to be the team that lost its first two exhibition matches by a total score of 6-1? Or is this going to be the team that won 6-0, right, in its third and final exhibition? To me, it's, can you be aggressive offensively without getting beat on the back end? I mean, to me, that's what it's all going to come down to. It's a really challenging first match for them, but I'm super excited to watch them play.
Again, SDFC kicks off their first regular season match this Sunday at 4 p.m. against the LA Galaxy in Carson. And they'll be hosting their home opener Saturday, March 1st at Snapdragon Stadium. I want to thank my guest this week, Cesar Hernandez. He covers soccer for ESPN. Cesar, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Alejandro Villaseñor has also been with us. He's with San Diego Football. You can hear him on the podcast, Two Balls and a Mic, as well. Alejandro, thanks a lot for making the time.
Thank you so much for the invitation.
And Ryan Finley is sports editor with the San Diego Union-Tribune. Ryan, thanks to you.
Great. Anytime.
That'll do it for Roundtable this week. Thanks so much for listening. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen to Roundtable anytime as a podcast. KPBS Roundtable airs on KPBS-FM at noon on Fridays, again Sundays at 6 a.m. If you have any thoughts on today's show, you can email us at roundtable@kpbs.org. You can also leave us a message at 619-452-0228. Roundtable's technical producer this week was Brandon Trufa. The show was produced by Ashley Rush. Brooke Ruth is Roundtable's senior producer. I'm Andrew Bracken. Thanks again for listening, and have a great weekend.